Hello, Courtney. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm feeling fine
Feel like I haven't
because
talked to you in a while.
it does feel that way, doesn't it? Maybe it's the holidays or just 2020 in general. It's been so much. It's been so much. But I think we've learned from 2020. I think we've gotten stronger. I think we're ready to do bigger things.
Agreed. Totally agreed.
And I think a sign of us doing bigger things is this podcast, because normally throughout 2020, we did pretty much one-on-one interviews, but this podcast, we're doing two interviews for the price of one.
Oh, that's a great deal.
It is at no additional cost to the listener. We're going to be talking to two people, Keith Gowdy and Robert Ryan, and I'm looking at their bios and they all have so much impressive stuff, and I'm like, I want to read all this stuff, but I don't want to make one or the other jealous by reading their long bio. The other one's maybe not as long, but both are equally impressive. So I think I'll just read just a little bit and then direct the listener to the podcast description if they want to, read the entire
Get all
bio.
the deets.
Yes. Oh wow, which one to pick? I'm gonna flip a virtual coin, and it's heads, which means I will talk about Keith Gowdy. Now, Keith joined the firm of shoot, Vantage Talent Accelerated. All right. I'm gonna have to cut that out. We're not keep going. Keith joined the firm of Vantage back in 1997. What was the hit song in 1997? I don't know. I have to look that up. But he has over 15 years. I don't know why I thought that. But he has over 15 years of experience in executive assessment, succession planning, and leadership development. In recent years, his focus has been on helping clients create winning strategies for building and managing their leadership bench strength. His passion and expertise lie in helping individuals prepare to get to the next level of leadership and helping organizations select and develop world-class management teams. Keith works with privately held firms as well as public corporations representing diverse industries, including energy, utilities, manufacturing, and healthcare. Bum, bum, bum. That's Keith. Now, Robert, who is equally as impressive, I'll read some of his because he has a long bio as well. Robert, or Bob, as they call him, Robert Ryan, a global business leader, is an executive advisor at Shields Manalay Partners. Bob's career has included key leadership roles of companies ranging from $500 million to $84 billion that include Procter & Gamble, Tate & Lyle, Bombardier Recreation Products, Kimball Hill Homes, and Griffith Laboratories. Born in Montreal, Canada, Bob began his career as a manufacturing engineer after graduating from Carleton University in Ottawa and McGill University in Montreal with a degree in mechanical aeronautical engineering. He quickly developed a reputation for bringing the right people together to address issues, guiding creative problem-solving, and ensuring successful outcomes. And that's just part of his amazing bio. These people are impressive, Courtney.
They are. I'm excited. I feel like I'm gonna have a lot to handle in this conversation, but it's
And I am feeling a little bit inadequate in their glory,
gonna be
but I'll have to just, pull my bootstraps up and stand up to the task. So, we'll find out what they have to say after this quick message.
You are listening to Tribe Pod, a podcast series of interviews of interest to the HR community. It is hosted by Courtney Lane, produced by Jim Stroud, sponsored by Proactive Talent, and enjoyed by you. Today's episode begins right after this.
On-demand recruiting is an hourly service that we offer where our recruiters work as an extension of your business, helping to fill your positions by finding top talent.
So, on-demand recruiting is there to address issues in hiring when a company is experiencing a lot of growth. when they're having some seasonality changes where they may temporarily need to expand their recruiting team. You maybe have a new line of business or a space where you're expanding your business and you need to bring in specialty expertise to help fill those niche roles that your internal team may not yet be ramped up on.
Proactive Talent's on-demand recruiting solution is quite different from a lot of the other models that you're going to see in the workplace. Whereas you're going to pay a contingency recruiting firm, typically on average around 20%, sometimes up to 30% of the first year salary of the person that you hire. And in that same period of time, you'll spend less than a quarter of that with Proactive Talent's managed on-demand recruiting.
For more information on Proactive Talent, visit them online at proactivetalent.com or click the link in the podcast description.
Well, hello, everyone. Today, we are shaking things up a bit, and we have two guests on with me today, so this will be a lot of fun. I'm joined by Bob Ryan from Shields Min Ali Partners and Keith Gowdy, who is a managing partner from Vantage Leadership Consulting. Welcome, Bob and Keith. I'm excited to have you both here with me today.
Great to be here.
So would love if you guys, just to start things off, tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what your respective firms do. Bob, you want to kick things off?
Sure. We'll do age before beauty.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Bob Ryan. Courtney, it's really nice to meet you. And I am a partner in a firm called Shields Min Ali Partners. The main thing we do is work with C-level and maybe one level below executives that are in transition. And they may be transitioning to a gig similar to what they did before, maybe something that's a little bit different or really different, like the journey into what used to be called retirement, which is now something completely different.
Interesting. Question about that later, but okay. And Keith?
Hi, Keith Gowdy here. I have been with our firm, Vantage Leadership Consulting, since 1997, which is, if I do the math, a long time, and I'm pretty much a lifer with the firm. And as our name suggests, we do a lot of leadership consulting, and our specialty is executive assessment, executive coaching, and support of leadership development and succession planning. And then we work with individuals, teams, et cetera. We have some overlap with Bob's firm, and then, you know, good bit of difference. And Bob and I have known each other for a good long while. Bob used to be a client of our firm, and then he moved into some, you know, he moved on and to a different organization. We've stayed in touch, and we have a lot of fun doing this kind of thing, just trying to think and write and publish and just stay in touch. It's a lot of fun for us.
I moved from the corporate role where I had been for many, many years into this role 7 years ago. And had been, as Keith mentions, a client of Vantage for many, many years. And Keith and I just made the point, we're going to do some stuff together. And so this is our third podcast, I think.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
You guys probably have the banter down. You know each other's tricks and secrets.
Yeah, we're gaining on it.
So I'm curious to sort of dive in, as I'm sure has been the theme of a lot of conversations folks are having right now. 2020 has, you know, turned some things on their head, and you all are both working specifically in that executive space. Where are the executives' mindsets right now? Like we've gotten through 2020, we're moving into 2021. What are their top priorities when they think about the development, their own development, the development of their teams? What are they thinking about as we shift into this new year and hopefully start putting some of 2020 behind us?
I'm sure a lot of them, Courtney, are thinking about how do we execute a business plan in the year in which we roll out a global vaccination process. and if they're not thinking about that, they ought to be, because this is something very new. And that is almost like a little flip comment, but it just sort of came to me as you were asking the question. I mean, this is, talk about uncharted territory. And I wonder, you know, 2020 was so uncharted, Bob, but then, you know, how much uncharted territory will there be in 2021, and what surprises in 21 and 22 should we be thinking about? Because 20 was sure full of surprises.
We certainly, we don't know what things are going to look like in 2021. We're not sure what the consumer is going to be like in 2021, because so many things have changed. And the one thing that I would say for any executive is you have to be agile, because whatever that is, you're going to have to adapt to it. The other thing that we like to say to our executives is if you can't really figure out what that future is going to look like, we say you can look around corners. Well, now you've got to be able to see through walls. Then you've got to invent it. And you've got to have the creativity on your team, the agility and the creativity on your team to be able to come up with a strategy that's based on a lot of unknowns.
Do you think that there is, because of 2020, throwing so many curveballs out there and really shifting how far into the future I think people thought they could see, that got shortened quite a bit. Do you think there's going to be some more hesitancy at the leadership level to make risky decisions or to invest in new spaces? Are they going to just try and stay the course for a while, or are they going to push?
I think it's the opposite. You better not hesitate. Mm-hmm. You've got to make prudent decisions. And I'd be interested to hear what Keith says. He may or may not agree with me on that, but you've got to take some risk. You've got to lean forward, not backwards. Otherwise you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, I agree, Bob. We've heard so many executives talk about, you know, whatever we're not good at, we better figure it out if it's something we're going to have to be good at. And as someone I serve as an executive coach for, he was just saying, there's going to be a lot of billionaires that come out of everything that's happened in 2020, and they're not going to be burdened by the legacy of whatever was in their business model before. And that's pretty interesting to think about.
Yeah.
I'm in the business of helping executives find that next gig. So doing a lot of work with recruiters. Mm-hmm. And it has been really interesting to watch the progression over the last year. But a study came out in October that said that there are just as many jobs or projects at the recruiters in October as there were pre-pandemic. The only thing is they're not all evened out to all of the recruiters. Some have a lot more. I've talked to recruiters that said, Bob, I've never been in this position where I have no assignments. And then I've talked to somebody the next day and I need help. I've got too many assignments. So there's created this imbalance, and it's very weird. We haven't seen this before.
Do you think that's going to, let me first ask this question. Do you think that imbalance is because so many teams had to, you know, have layoffs and cut their teams down very, very small, and so those that are left behind have these high volumes, whereas others may have stayed on at organizations that have just quit hiring, so they're sitting there, or maybe they're contract recruiters? What do you think are some of the driving reasons behind that? Because then I've got a follow-up to tag to it.
It's what the first thing you said. It's the fact that some, even in the big six recruiters, had layoffs, and mm-hmm. so they're just not as ready to take the business on. From a boutique standpoint, mm-hmm. somebody might have sat back a little while, and really, you've got to be leaning forward on this.
So, how do you think they're going to? How do we rebalance it then? What do you think we're going to see happening from a recruiting perspective? Like, what are CHRO and talent leaders and recruiting leaders and recruiters going to do to help rebalance that? And move things forward.
Well, from a CHRO standpoint, the first thing you need to do is figure out what talent do I need, what are the priorities, and who's out there that can help me. Yeah. And so the rebalancing may take some time.
Do you see that they're going to start, or have you seen more looking internally? Like, what do we need? Are CHROs or leaders looking and saying, we need to do a better job of building up talent internally and not having to rely so heavily or get more creative with our talent? You talk about agility. I would imagine some of that is in the space of the talent you're building and creating a more agile workforce that can wear a variety of boots.
Yeah, I believe that boards, CEOs, and CHROs should look at their leadership and answer the question, is the team that got us through the pandemic, which in many cases did a wonderful job, the right team for the future, the right talent overall for the future, with all of the unknowns, that it might not be exactly the right the right skill set for the future. So I do think companies need to look internally, but at the same time, there is a lot of great talent out there. There are especially companies that might have had five divisions with five presidents and one group president. Well, they might have cut down to two, and they didn't need the group president anymore. So think of those excellent talent that is out there right now, that companies can find.
Yeah.
All right, and Courtney, I think the old cliche, the war for talent, right, or that old that old line written about so many years ago, is going to become extremely intense over the next 3 to 5 years. You know, you look at geopolitical issues, demographic trends. You know, a lot of our clients will talk about, geez, you know, the talent, the dearth of talent in Europe, for example, how hard it is to find folks is going to really intensify. And so it's really this interesting kind of dilemma of when do we really begin to recruit in a way that'll define the new normal for the next 3 to 5 years. It's going to have, you're going to have to be very aggressive. And I think, Bob, you said earlier, you know, if you're sitting around waiting to simply outlast the pandemic or something, or you're just looking to get through, we've heard a lot of people say you're almost, and it might be a little bit of hyperbole, sealing your fate, or you're, you know, we know how this is going to go if you're going to try to ride this out.
Well, and I would imagine that on top of all of that, the fact that so many companies have now been forced to go remote and their talent pools have shifted in the way that they even look, because before, if they only hired people that lived within a, you know, a certain geographic region, and now they've got a fully remote team,
right,
it opens things up. Although there are some complexities that come with that, because I think what we've learned is everybody got really excited about work from home in March and April, and now we're starting to see this other side of it. Are you all seeing that? Are there downsides to that high sort of growth in the work from home space?
You've got to be very careful. There's a couple of things, and Keith, you can add on to this, I'm sure. But what we saw back in March for the first time, or April for the first time, people were interviewing, getting their offers, and starting jobs remote. We had never thought that would ever happen. And those people are still in their rut jobs, and they still haven't talked to or met anybody in person. And we're seeing two things that they might have missed along the way. And this is where Keith and I can help as coaches. The first is that they when you join a company, your onboarding plan needs to be delivered. It needs to happen. A watch out is that you're going to probably do a good job getting to know your boss and your direct reports, but you might forget about the fact that you've got peers out there as well. And so you need to reach out to your peers. And I've had examples of when people do that, they actually get surprised. It's delightful that you actually called me. Otherwise, we've never met, and there isn't a natural way for us to meet. And we're hearing stories, all kinds of stories like that. The fact that you can't drop in to somebody's office and say, good job on that account, or great job in that meeting. So we're telling our clients to, during the onboarding process, to actually make a note that sending a text to somebody or a quick phone call it's not as good, but it can take the place of that quick duck into the office to say hello or good job. Keith?
Courtney, we were talking about before last week, Bob and I, about what surprised us or things we weren't anticipating. Many people are getting new jobs without leaving their house, or they're starting new jobs without leaving their house. That is pretty mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing, yeah.
Certainly work from home works, and it's been accelerated. A lot of clients have talked about that they were putting it off, shifting the workforce to be more mobile, more remote. And now, you know, you see that, well, we had to do it, and certainly it works. I guess it would be also funny to say we've all learned the importance of good lighting, right? We're all like set designers now in our homes. And, you know, if you want to be taken seriously, if this is the new normal in a lot of ways for at least some period of time, you know, you better try to look good. we've noted, it's hard, you know, we have a firm of 30 people at Vantage, and it's hard not to take that as a microcosm of the world of work. And in some ways it's different, right? But I think terms like wellness, leaders really showing they care about people and balance, these could sometimes be considered fluffy or buzzwords. They're essential. You know, when people get burnt out from too many hours on Zoom, they can't take another meeting. We talk to people who have 8 Zoom, not to pick on Zoom, any platform, right? You have 8 meetings in a row. They can't wait to not have to look at a video monitor. Another thought that kind of comes up from your questions, Courtney, is this idea of resilience. We've talked about resilience in leaders for years, right? This is why leaders have to be resilient, because tough times demands people, to lead, right, through adversity. What about organizational resilience? We've learned a lot of organizations aren't nearly as resilient as they thought they would be in terms of their business model. Take hospitality, and I guess there's also something to be said for good fortune, but what are you doing as an organization, as a leader, to build the resilience of your team? I mean, we're hearing some horrible things, not to get gloomy around the holidays, about what's happening in people's teams, right? They're really suffering some tragedy and experiencing some tragedy. And so if you're not thinking about wellness, and if you're a leader who cannot show you care, it's going to be very hard to work with people who are working from home. And I guess the last thing I'll say, and I was just drinking a lot of coffee, Courtney, so you have to forgive me. I remember years ago, we had a client, he's a former CEO, and he said, when I took this job, I realized I'd have to innovate myself one or two times during my tenure. And that was a neat story to share. And now it's almost a necessity. Mm-hmm. Are people willing to innovate themselves? How do you lead a team when you may not meet any of them in person for the next year? So those are a few thoughts that come to mind when you talk about work from home.
Yeah, there's been a couple of things that where CHROs have played an important role, and that is back in March, convincing their CEOs that they need to communicate more frequently and they need to be very transparent and they need to show empathy. So 10 months into this, let's say the pandemic went away tomorrow and everything went back to normal, people are still going to expect that level of transparency and communication. The more you communicate, the more you're expected to communicate. And that level of empathy just can't go away. So we need to keep momentum going on those things. And as Keith said, keeping in mind people's well-being, that needs to continue.
So do you think that driving voice and that sort of a empathetic approach, is that coming from the CEO? Is that coming from CHRO? Who's within the organization? I mean, we're all responsible, but within the organization, who really needs to be the one that reminds folks that, guys, we got to keep this top of mind. We need to, or is it a muscle everybody needs to now strengthen?
Courtney, years ago, we had a client, a CEO, and we were doing a CHRO. We were assessing a CHRO candidate. And the CEO said, the CEO and the CHRO need to get a 5 out of 5 on cares about people. So I think, and that was provocative, and I think true. So I think it does have to start there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I totally agree. If it's only coming from the CHRO, you've got a problem. But there is a role for the CHRO to help his or her CEO express themselves. And we saw a lot of that. I talked to 30 CHROs every couple of months, and the best in class companies got it early.
Yeah. So Keith, you mentioned earlier about wellness. What does wellness look like? I mean, I think traditionally we have sort of this image of what wellness means, but what does wellness look like in this new world? What are those pieces that executives and leaders need to be thinking about putting in place when they think about putting together a true employee wellness kind of program or offerings?
That is a very good question. To be honest with you, in our firm, we're experimenting because, we have post-millennials, millennials, Xers, boomers. It means something different, I think, to different people, people who are more familiar with technology versus not. It's certainly a recognition that people do not have the ability to recover like they do during, quote, normal times, right? We've we've talked to a number of CEOs who say they're tired by 3 o'clock, you know, CEOs, come on, they're legendary for, you know, working 80 hours a week if they need to. So I think it's really just making sure you're listening. I'm the managing director of our firm, so I have to show I care. And then it's certainly making sure you're willing to, you know, the term pivot, I guess, but because it's changed probably 4 times in 2020. What, you know, in March and April and May, everyone needed a lot of communication. I don't think they need as much communication, but they sure like a lot more of it than they did last year. And it's, you know, it's pretty funny in our firm, and we talk about this with clients. You know, we start meetings with meditation, and for some people who don't like the touchy-feely or something different, it's a little far out, but it's, you know, pushing comfort zones. It's having dialogues that encourage more inclusivity, you know, because that was such an important thing to talk about this year. And it's really just sort of figuring out what aspects of our culture aren't encouraging people to sort of stay balanced and resilient. You know, we say things, we can say we care, but then, you know, for example, at the beginning of the pandemic, people were now on Zoom meetings from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. You know, and so if that's the only way we're going to stay in business, is that what we're going to do? Because that's not going to really last. So it's really kind of taking a look at, you know, what's changing and trying to get ahead of it. You know, there are a lot of technologies in terms of little, you know, software you can use so people can quickly weigh in on, here's my workload, here's how busy I am. And then the last thing I would say is, and we're very fortunate in our firm, you know, that you figure out really pretty quickly during a year like 2020, there are a lot of trust. Do you trust each other? And I'm probably going to talk about something I don't know about, but the idea that people are using softwares to monitor, are people online and available throughout the day? It sort of makes me want to barf. Just hearing that makes me a little sick. And I get why some organizations may need to do it, but how are your employees going to be, how are the people who work with you going to be reacting to that? You know, when they get a chance to run, they might.
Yeah.
Managers have to be super sensitive to what's going on with their employees, because we don't get to see them between meetings now. You see them in a meeting, and in a meeting, you can be on for that, whatever it is, 40, 45 minutes or an hour. And you don't know what's happening right after that meeting because you're not with them anymore. So you really do need to check in. And there's another part to that, and that is checking in on yourself. And one of the things I remind chief human resource officers is, you just spent the last 10 months taking care of thousands of people. What about yourself? Are you taking care of yourself?
Right.
Yeah, certainly the leading by example, because just last week, actually, I was having a conversation with someone and we were talking about time off and how it feels in this new space where we're all working from home and we're not traveling as much. It's harder to feel like you have an excuse, quote unquote, to take the time off. But the fatigue is very, very real. And you spend time staring at the screen and you're trying to balance the children at home and all of the things that are happening, and having a significant other that's now your coworker sitting next door. And that's a whole different type of water cooler politics that you're playing there. And, you know, it's just it's a really different thing. Do you find, are we seeing burnout at the leadership level? Are they reaching their breaking points?
Hard to say because we don't see them.
Yeah.
But, you know, my wife, for example, she works with a firm that coaches, people that are under stress, and she'll tell you that it is really, really tough out there because people are burning out and they're not sure what to do or who to turn to. They don't even have the people to talk to. If they haven't put structure in their day to allow for some timeouts. I know at the beginning of this in April, I found myself burning out and realized that I had no breaks in the day. Mm-hmm. I was going from 8 o'clock to 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night doing Zooms, and which happens in my business. Actually, my business works really well under Zoom, but still you have to watch out for yourself, and there's a lot of people that are, just because they don't have the people to talk to, to say, hey Keith, You look like you're really tired today. Can we talk? Let's have a coffee. Let's have a Zoom coffee together and chat. Yeah. And whereas he and I would see each other and have a cup of coffee at Starbucks, we're not doing that anymore. So right. We can't check in on each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to assume that people are on the brink of burnout almost weekly. Mm-hmm. and kind of go from there. And I think you're right, Bob. You have to start by taking care of yourself, be a good role model. So if you're role modeling that you're the kind of person that needs to work from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., that's, I think, a little dangerous in the current environment.
Yeah.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and shift a little bit away from maybe the downsides that we've experienced, because I think what we've also seen, I know we've seen it with some of the clients that we've been working with that have either 10 months ago were a non-essential service and now they're essential service, and it's, you know, sort of ignited energy in their organizations, but also just organizations in general having to get really creative. And you talked about agility earlier, but I think I would guess, and I'd love for you to share, do you have examples of companies or leaders you've worked with this year that you've seen sort of not only rise to the challenge of 2020, but also get really creative in some fun and interesting ways with how to do things differently?
For example, I used to wear a suit 3 days a week. I may never wear a suit again. you can get away with wearing a t-shirt. And I noticed this in a meeting about a couple months ago. I'm talking to these two high-powered executives, and they're both wearing t-shirts. And how far things have come in that respect. And so, yeah, you can relax that way. I happen to be a big fan of the happy hour. Mm-hmm. So we encourage companies to do that, to have get their employees together from 5 to 6 one day over Zoom or whatever platform and have a drink together. And you can then break into small groups, which you can do with this technology, and just chat and just kind of relax for a little while and have a cocktail or some kind of adult beverage together.
I think if you're honest and you're authentic, it goes a long way to setting the right tone. And we've, in our firm, for example, we found until we got super busy at the end of this year, in some ways, our collegiality and our morale improved. It might be sort of like we're doing this together, right? We are. Mm-hmm. We wondered at the beginning of the pandemic, will we be in business in 9 months? It's fair to wonder that. And then we're sort of pulling together. And people are, I think, in our firm showing more initiative than they have in the past. We're seeing leaders doing that. And I said something earlier. I think leaders need to show a healthy willingness to sort of experiment, try new things. We're doing gratitude circles in our firm on Fridays to have an option, you know, without alcohol early in the day to provide another option for people. And, it can get a little spacey on there, but it's really just people connecting and finding out what works, because what we're really trying to sort of figure out is, you know, are people feeling isolated? And there is, and you talked about the downsides, Courtney, and I want to be careful that there is this weird category of, you know, the weird upside of 2020. Mm-hmm. You know, we've learned, for example, that we are willing to be more creative. We are willing to try new things. It's been really surprising what has worked. I've learned as a managing director, I was trying to think of this. The thought was lost from my mind. It's okay for me not to have the answers. Mm. People don't expect me to have all the answers, because if I act like I have all the answers, they'll know I'm BSing them to some extent. Like, oh yeah, you can predict 6 to 9 months from now when no one else can. You know, and it's like, well, here's the upside. Here's the downside. Here's where I think we have an opportunity. Here's what might set us back. And I think that is really, that's an upside for me, just being willing, being able to say, look, let me be candid with you. We have a client who told analysts, look, we can't really get back to figuring out our valuation as a publicly traded company until 2021. And this was back in May, and their stock price went up all year. You know what I mean? So there are certainly some upsides to the current environment.
Somebody asked me the question, when we look back at this year, what happened that made it one of the best years of your life? And it's a provocative question, but if you think about all of the silver linings, and I know there's lots of downsides, and some families have experienced a dreadful time, grief, and so on. But for a big portion of the population, there's been a lot of upsides. I became a grandfather this year. It'll be for the first time, that'll be the thing I will remember about 2020 is little Augie being born. And my two daughters were able to move closer because they could work remotely, and they wanted to move closer. There's one silver lining after another. And I think we can, if you watch the news every day, it's pretty ugly. But if you step back and look and find those silver linings, we have a higher level of participation in voluntary meetings with our clients. We have a meeting every week where we bring our clients together that are all in transition. Mm-hmm. And whereas we would get maybe a third of the people show up, we're getting just about everybody now. It's easy to connect. The other thing, just to build on one of the things that Keith talked about, and that is we went to a daily meeting with our staff. And in bigger companies, that might be a daily meeting with your direct reports, because then people feel like they belong to something. And in that meeting, you can talk about where I need help, what I'm working on, and thank people for showing your gratefulness for things that other people on your team have done. But most of all, just still being connected.
So I do have one last question. I want to circle back because I made a mental note and I wrote it down and I want to come back to it. But, you know, Bob, you mentioned earlier about retirement and you made a comment around that it's not really when people are transitioning now at the end of their careers, it's a completely different animal. Can you sort of expand on that? Tell me what you mean.
Yeah. The classic retirement just hardly ever happens anymore where somebody just golfs for the rest of their days. We remind people that the average age of our clients is 55, and they still could be productive for 30, 40 more years, maybe as long as they've worked in the corporate world. And so a lot of people are looking towards purpose, staying current. And what we see with a lot of our clients, in fact, a quarter of our clients are doing portfolios. And what we've proven is that doing five things gives you a lot more flexibility than doing one big thing. So if you're gonna be a CEO of a company, you're doing one big thing. That's all you're doing. Yeah. If you're doing five things, like some board of directors work, some consulting, maybe some writing, speaking, whatever, those things you can turn on and off, and have some flexibility so that you can go someplace else. You can go to the south of France and for 3 months and sip wine for, and when you're CEO of a company, you can't do that.
Right.
So, Bob, when are you going to the south of France?
I'm not going anywhere right now.
I said again.
I might go to Binny's.
You know, Courtney, so many people are asking the question, what's changed? And of course, we don't know, but something's changed, right? It'd be impossible to imagine we would go back to the way things were, last December. I think to Bob's point, it does really open up possibilities for people when they retire. But we're a Chicago-based firm. We have some colleagues on the East Coast, but we've been hiring people all over the place. We've hiring interns in Florida, and Ohio, and all in different places. And I think it may be that we're more, our careers are more transportable than they ever were before.
Yeah.
I like that careers are transportable. I'm going to steal that. I will give you credit, but I'm going to steal it.
Awesome.
Well, I've enjoyed having both of you here today. And as we're sort of getting to the end of their time, any final thoughts that you would want to share before we wrap up? And also, if you'll add on, if folks want to reach out to either one of you directly, what's the best way for them to do that?
I'll go first. The one thing I would say is take some time to reflect, to stop. We're moving so fast. You're in calls all day long. take some time to reflect on the silver linings and maybe the areas that you're grateful, and ensure that you stay connected, not just to your company, but to your family and to yourself. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, they can find us on our website, shieldsmeneely.com. You can call or text me as well.
Great. Yeah, Bob, I really agree that the need for introspection is key after a year like this. And I suppose, I also feel like, we've gotten a lot of good news in the last 2 months, you know, with treatments being available and going forward. So it's probably also a very good time, although there could be some big challenges ahead, to think about what's the opportunity, you know, and in the next 9 months for me as a professional, for our company, for our firm, for my career. It may be a good time to remind ourselves to do that while still taking care of ourselves, for sure. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can visit our website, vantageleadership.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today, or joining me today, rather. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I appreciate you both coming on here and sharing your insights as to what's going on in the world. And to all of our listeners, thank you all for joining in and listening. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thanks, Courtney. Thanks, Courtney.
Aren't they lovely?
That was fun. Nice.
Yeah, they were nice guys.
I like having two people on.
Yes, that's right. We're getting better now with two guests instead of just one. We're getting up there, man. We're getting up there. I wanted to ask, did anyone? It was two questions I wanted to ask. One question I wanted to ask was, did anybody ever confuse this company with Milli Vanilli? And how you pronounce this company, Vanilli Partners?
Like Vanilli. I think I just butchered it once we got on air, even though I had practiced it beforehand. But
I would have jumped in and asked, but I didn't want to offend them. I wish we could have asked them too about a formal t-shirt policy when he said everybody, you know, wears t-shirts now. Mm-hmm. If you know, does everyone have like a standard blue t-shirt, black t-shirt, or tuxedo t-shirt for those special occasions?
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about that the other day, like if a t-shirt policy was going to be a thing. It's so funny that you say that, because I was thinking to myself, I started to put a t-shirt on and I went, wait, is the phrasing on this appropriate? Like, can people see this on a screen, and do I need to?
That's a good point. I'm wondering what our listeners think. Listeners, should there be a standard t-shirt corporate policy?
Yeah.
If so, or if not, let us know. You can reach us by emailing us at tribepod, T-R-I-B-E-P-O-D, at proactivetalent.com. And as I say that, I'll leave the last moment to Courtney, who may have more to say, since I think I jumped in there faster than I should have. But there you go.
No, I haven't. No? Nothing else to say.
Oh, well, there you go. I was wrong again. All right.